Hey, Coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game.
Hey, Coach. I'm excited to announce a brand new way to access our resources to elevate your coaching monthly memberships. At Basketball Immersion, we know every coach's journey is unique, just like your player's skill sets. That's why we're dedicated to providing you with the flexibility you crave. Our new monthly access plan lets you get full access to all our videos and courses on a month-to-month basis, giving you the freedom to cancel or renew as needed. Whether you're just starting out or looking to add some fresh perspectives to your existing coaching repertoire, Basketball Immersion has the resources to help you reach your goals. Head over to basketballimmersion.com to take control of your coaching journey and unlock your full potential with Basketball Immersion.
Awesome to welcome Atlanta Dream head coach Tanisha Wright to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Wright joined the Atlanta Dream prior to the 2022 WNBA season and led the franchise to its most wins in a season, 14, since 2018. Her breakout first year as a head coach with the Dream also earned her the Associated Press Coach of the Year Award and a second place finish in WNBA Kia Coach of the Year voting. As head coach, Wright is responsible for fostering the growth of the Dream's players, establishing a culture of integrity and accountability. She brings 14 years of WNBA experience as a player and two more seasons as an assistant coach with the Las Vegas Aces. A first-round draft pick in 2005, Wright spent 10 seasons as a guard with the Seattle Storm, where she helped lead the team to 9 straight playoff appearances and a WNBA championship in 2010. She played another 4 seasons with the New York Liberty and Minnesota Lynx before retiring as a player in 2019. While still playing in the league, Wright began her coaching career in 2017, as an assistant with the University of North Carolina Charlotte 49ers. In 2020, the Aces signed her as an assistant coach, where she worked closely with industry leader Bill Laimbeer. Coach Wright, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome to have you here. And what a season. What a first season there. And obviously continuing to grow and build. And I'm curious maybe to start with, obviously incredible success as a player. Did you have a vision of coaching while you were still playing?
Yeah, no, not really. I played for both for Bill and Brian, and they both had planted little seeds in terms of be great coaching, think about it. And towards the end of my career, it started to be something that I think I just naturally did with like younger players, you know what I mean? Just mentoring younger players. And so I took a season off in 2017, was able to go up to New York. I sat in some of their coaching meetings, went up there for training camp. So that was pretty cool. And then I started coaching college later that same year just to get my feet wet, see if it was something that I would really enjoy and really. So it just came about organically, but not anything that I actually set out to do.
One of the things that's shown up many times on the podcast with the former player as successful as you in transitioning to coaching is really how different the experience is once you start coaching than what you expected as a player. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Oh yeah, it holds true. It holds true. It's definitely a different experience. I think obviously coaching the game is much harder because you can't go out there and physically do the things that you may see or that you're trying to put into play. You know what I mean? And so that makes it much harder because now you're just trying to guide others to do it the way that you see fit and how you see the game should be played and et cetera, et cetera. So it's a completely different experience. Both of them rewarding in their own ways. I think coaching still allows people who have a competitive spirit to really continue to use that competitive spirit. And so that's what's really exciting for me. And then I enjoyed the teaching part and being around the players and giving them all the knowledge that was imparted onto me when I played. So it's a cool experience.
No doubt it's a cool experience, and I'm glad you're doing it. And obviously you made a huge impact right away on the Atlanta franchise. I'm curious, beyond obviously talented players, which we all know are the most important things, what are some of the keys to that turnaround to get it back to the plateau that obviously the franchise and you expected?
Yeah, I think obviously it's with the talented players, but it's also with the people that you want to surround yourself with every single day. Like the W is a grind, you know what I mean? It's rewarding, but it's also work, you know what I mean? When you come to the W, you expect to work and you get great rewards with it. And so every day that you're doing this and you're chopping at it and you're trying to build every single day, you want to be surrounded by people that you enjoy being around. So that was number one, I think, for us as we took this thing over. I think number two is just building the right culture. Like how do you want to show up every day? What's the way that you want the organization to be ran from top to bottom? It's not just the basketball side, but everything. And so building out the right culture. And I know it's such a culture, is such a buzzword these days, but it matters. It matters. How you do anything is how you do everything. And so those things set the precedence for your success on the court as well. So that was really important. Those two things were really important to us as we tried to change this thing around and where we're sitting at now. And we think that we've done a pretty good job, and we just want to continue to build on that.
I've heard others in private conversations say that building culture, for example, in the WNBA is one of the hardest things to do, because players are obviously, they're coming right off another season usually. Obviously, it's in the summer as well. So these different types of influences, whether it's national programs or coming from other seasons, and really a short season relative to other professional leagues. So talk to us a little bit about how you approach building culture from day one with these players that, again, have often come from playing other seasons.
Yeah, I think you have to exhibit it yourself. I think how you carry yourself and the people within your organization, how they go about carrying themselves, I think that's the first example to how you build the culture. You know what I mean? You make it a place where somebody's going to be uncomfortable if they don't fit the culture, if they don't fit the things that the way that you're doing it, obviously in the right way. So I think just setting a standard, hey, this is how we do things from day one. You know what I mean? We're not going to accept anything less than this, because this is how we want to do things from the top to the bottom. So I think setting that standard from day one and then standing on that, not altering, not wavering, not changing. It doesn't matter who comes through. Obviously, these are professional women. You know what I mean? They're professional women players. And so there's leeway in certain ways, but you never change the standards to what your culture is, what your foundation is. The foundation has to be rock steady. And so I think that's how you do it from day one.
How do you get beyond, as a former player, how do you get beyond that mentality of it worked for me, and truly invest in your learning and development as a coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was fortunate enough I played majority of my career in Seattle. I played my first 10 years in Seattle. And then my latter years, I played in New York. And the group that we had in Seattle, we were very business-like. Like, we show up, we do our job, and that's just what it is. But when I went to New York, it was a different experience. Like, it was a childlike love for the game. Like, they wanted to be jokey and always having fun. Like, nothing was serious. You know what I mean? And that also worked. So I had the great experience. I had the great opportunity to experience that. And that right there did it for me. That experience did it for me. It proved and it showed to me there's more ways than one to skin a cat. And you can still, and we had great success in my years in New York. And so I learned right then and there, firsthand experience, that there's different ways to get the job done. And you have to be open to seeing those different ways, to experiencing those different ways, because people have won completely different, no matter which side of the coin they've been on. You know what I mean? Success just looks different. And it's never a one size fit all thing when it comes to that.
So which side do you fit on now?
Both sides. Like, when we're, yeah, both sides. Like, I like to have a good time, and they know that we can have a good time. We can joke, we can laugh, but I'm also serious. I'm also intense. And when it's time to get to work, it's time to get to work. But I'm on both sides of it now, which I see that it's important, especially with this generation. It's a younger generation. And so they're used to being a little bit more freer, but I do recognize in the times where I'm like buttoned up and straightforward and intense, like, they rise to the occasion. So it's necessary. It's both sides is very necessary for our success, at least.
Love it. And you mentioned coaching professional players. But at the same time, as Coach Wright still has to hold them accountable to doing the things that she wants them to do to be the best version of themselves, and obviously for the team as well. So can you take us inside what it looks like for Coach Wright to hold a player accountable to doing something?
Yeah, good question. Another good question. I think practices are the easiest ways, right? Like, paying attention to detail. If I'm asking you to get to the X and the X is in the corner, don't stop two lines short. Don't stop two steps short. Get to the corner. And even if that means we have to blow your whistle, even if that means we have to point it out, like, whatever it is, I think you got a whole, we practice the small details, holding people accountable to the small details, so that the bigger things that matter, they can be able to do those at the drop of a dime. So I think that's it. The same, like, we find people if you show up late. Like, we have a standard. Like, we're not showing up late to meetings. We're not showing up late to the training room. Like, all those things matter, and you're going to pay a price for those for not adhering to those kind of things. So that's accountability. And it's not just the players. It's myself as well. If I feel like I've come into a game and I didn't do my job, I will absolutely come at the end of the game and tell the players, hey, y'all, this is on me. Don't worry about it. I wasn't good enough today. You know what I mean? So we like to model it from the top down. You know what I mean? And I think those are some ways that we try to hold people accountable and players accountable.
I will make sure I get to that line, Coach. I will get to that exact spot. Don't worry. And maybe play design. Let's approach it from play design first, because obviously you have a lot of strengths on your team and you have a lot of potential non-strengths on your team as well. So maybe take us inside, identifying and leveraging the strengths of each player on your roster to maximize a play.
Yeah, so we play a very open style of basketball where we actually don't have a ton of plays. We don't. We have a handful of go-tos that we will go to, but the reason why we play the way we play, because we don't like putting players into boxes. We don't like to say, hey, this is the only thing that you're good at. No, like, players are multidimensional and can do multiple things. So for us, we start in the open. So we got four out, one in our offense. So we're setting a lot of screens so players can make reads off of those screens. If I set you a down screen, you have so many different options. You can use the screen. You can come straight up for a shot. You can curl the screen into the paint and get a layup. You can fade on the screen and shoot a three, attack a closeout. Like, it allows our players the opportunities just to use all of their strengths. Now, some players have certain strengths where those strengths are top of the line, and we want them, and we absolutely want them to use that. Like, Leash, we know it's almost impossible to stop Leash from getting to that left-hand pull-up. So if we're going to design a play, we're going to design a play where Leash can get downhill to that one dribble left-hand pull-up, or she can get to a layup, you know what I mean, going to her left. And I think that's just in general, but we like to play an open style so that our players aren't put in a box and they can use all their strengths.
That brings up another question about, obviously, you mentioned like certain players have these like unstoppable moves that they're just so good with. But when it comes to player development, how much of that is like we're trying to shape something different versus we're trying to just build on what they already do so well?
Yeah, I think you're always going to build on what players do. We have a full-time personal development player we're a full-time player development coach that lives in Atlanta full-time. So if our players aren't headed overseas and they're in market and they want to get work in, we provide that for them. So you're always going to build on what somebody's strengths are. And then every player has room to grow. We call it areas of growth. We don't want to say it's a negative. It's not a negative. It's just an area where you need to grow at. And so we're going to focus on that a lot too, because I think what players tend to do is they focus on their comfort zone. You know what I mean? Like, we know you can do that already. This is an area where you need to grow and stretch yourself. So let's do that. Let's hit this in the off season. Let's continue to rep the things that you're good at, but let's continue to add. I think that's one of the regrets I think I have as a player, is just not always focusing, not using my off seasons to focus on adding to the bag. You know what I mean? Okay, yeah, I can get to this right hand and it's pretty good, but what if I get this right hand pull up where it's stronger? So I think you're always gonna work on the things that you're good at, but I think honing in on the things that you're not good at is really important.
Love it. And you've been through a lot of different versions of basketball as a player and as a coach now, especially with data and analytics. So I'm curious your perspective. What role do analytics play in your coaching strategy? And then probably most importantly, how do you balance data-driven decisions with the intangible aspects that you already referenced there?
You have to have both. I think you have to have a good doses of both. I think where the data really shows up in terms of my coaching is really like how we prep for practices and different things like that, like making sure that the players are going to be fresh, making sure that the day before we're not on their legs too much. Like, we use a lot of data and a lot of analytics in terms of our prep work, getting players prepared so that when they step on the court, that's all they have to focus on is playing a game. They're not worried about, oh, their legs are tired, or oh, this. So that's where mine comes in a lot. And obviously, we look at opponents and what they're best at, and we try to strategize with that in terms of coming up with a scout and taking those things away from them. So I think it's important, But I think when it comes to like evaluation and evaluating players, you have to have a great feel for the player too. And the eyeball test, like it's been used for years and years and years, the eyeball test. And so people have done pretty good with that too. And data analytics is just starting to surface really. And so the eyeball test has worked, but I think it's there's a place for both of them mixed in together, not 100% one way or 100% the other way.
Absolutely. And removing the eyeball maybe from a defensive lens, are there any analytics on defense that particularly resonate with you as a coach?
Defensive analytics. I think when you're talking about effective field goal percentage, I think that is a, if you look at the analytics on that, is a high indicator in terms of success defensively. You know what I mean? So paying attention to that. I think the analytics on rebounding, I think that, but I don't think you need analytics for those things. I think those things are just part of the natural progression of the game of basketball. Like you can rebound the ball, you put yourselves in a really good position to be successful. So yeah, there's always some. I think one of the ones that we look at that I struggle with is like the correlation with teams who get steals. The analytics with the correlation with teams who get steals because of, I like to play a lot of position basketball. So our teams might not generate that many turnovers or that many steals. And a lot of it has to do with just my coaching technique in terms of stay in position, be disciplined. And so the analytics with that, I'm still wrestling with. So we'll see.
That's great. And obviously, that philosophy defensively, where was that born from? Was that more for you as a player or when you started to have different coaching mentors?
It definitely was not for me for a player because I wouldn't call myself undisciplined, but especially younger when my athleticism was at its highest, like I can go for steals and I can get steals and I can get out of position and recover well enough. I think it's just part, like it has grown in me in terms of the different coaches that I've played under and that I've seen and that I've watched. So I think that has played a huge part in what I think. And I guess my belief is that you give your team a great opportunity to be successful on any defensive possession if you can keep the ball in front of you, if you can keep people in front of you. So that's why I say a lot discipline, but who knows? We'll see what changes I make this upcoming season.
There's always adjustments and all those different things that come with coaching, and that's wonderful. And you mentioned having a player development coach full-time, obviously there in Atlanta, but more from your perspective as a coach, take us in how you approach or you communicate individual player feedback to a player in terms of their development and their place within the team, their role within the team.
Yeah, great question. We love to do like role meetings because I just feel like players shouldn't be in the dark about what their specific role is on this team or how they can contribute to the team's success. So we typically, every year, we meet with every individual player on our team as a coaching staff, and we give them feedback on where we think their game is at. And it's not just us telling them, like, it is a collaboration. Do you agree with this? Is there something else that you believe for yourself? You know what I mean? And we give them an opportunity to give us that feedback. And then we may right there on the spot say, yeah, you're right. That's a good one. Let's add that to your role. You know what I mean? Or we may take that and be like, okay, let us think about it because we think these other things are something that you're going to be better at for our team, right? Because that changes depending on where a player is and what a team has, your role can change. You can be on our team and you could be on our team in 2024 and have one role, but in 2025, your role can change based upon the players that we now have on our roster. And so we think it's just really important that there's no player in the dark. No player will ever be able to say, oh, I didn't understand my role. It was a very clear conversation. Here's your number one role, your number two role, your number three role. You agree, you don't agree. I just think it keeps it clear, it keeps it clean, and we can always revert back to those conversations and say whether or not they're executing their roles at a high level.
Particularly around players that maybe aren't playing as much in season. Yep. You've communicated it, obviously they understand it. Now, what are some things that you're doing to help those players continue to grow when they don't necessarily get the game reps?
Yeah, I think that's development. That's all development. That's all, just because you're not getting the game reps doesn't mean that you can't still grow, doesn't mean that you can't still get better. So it's really honing in on practice, taking advantage of the opportunities that you have. So if we have a 20-minute skill development workout as a team, like, you're being focused during that 20 minutes. You're using that time to get better because that is your time to get better. You know what I mean? And then when you have opportunities, I like to tell our athletes a lot that, especially in the game, when the score is what it is and like the last 3 minutes we're putting in some subs, like, this time is still important. This is important to you and your development because now here's a real time game opportunity for you to get reps real time. This is not practice. This is actually a game. I don't care what the score is, right? It's an opportunity for you to get better. So I think looking at every situation as an opportunity to grow is how we present it and what we focus on, not looking at it like, oh, this is garbage time, or looking at it like, oh, this doesn't matter, I'm not going to play anyway. But you're still developing. You know what I mean? You're still getting reps, and that's just as important.
Absolutely, just as important. And WNBA schedule and the demands of that, you don't necessarily have what we would consider traditional practices as much. So it places more importance on game day shoots or shoot arounds to be able to develop the things that you want. Can you take us through what that looks like for coach?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think it puts a lot of, I wouldn't even call it pressure, it puts a lot of importance on our training camps in terms of getting in the most important things during that time, the foundational things. So I think we try to really focus in during that time to make sure we get in all the important things that are going to be necessary for our team and our development because of the style of play that we play. And then film work. I know that not a lot of the young kids love to be sitting in front of the computer and watching film work, but that is just such a big piece to development. And it's an underrated piece, in my opinion, in terms of opportunity to get better. You know what I mean? Like, just being able to break down film, watch film on yourself and your opponents to gain an extra advantage. We all know everybody in this league is talented. You wouldn't be here if you weren't talented. Yeah, some are more talented than others. We understand that. But on a normal level, everybody is talented. So what are the things that we're doing to create a separator? And I just think players that see the importance of really focusing on the mental aspect of the game, not just always the physical aspect of the games, are the ones that are leaps and bounds ahead of the curve.
When you're going through opponent scouts, say in a game day shoot, so we're not doing the video, we're actually on the floor. Yeah. How are you doing that? Is there a scout team, or is it just both teams get reps? How are you approaching that?
Yeah, so we definitely have a scout team. Shout out to our practice guys. Our practice guys are amazing and great. And there are times where they show up to our shoot arounds for us as well. And like I said to you earlier, like, everybody's all in on this. It's not just us coaches and us players. It's our scout team. It's our support staff. If we don't have enough for a scout team, our support staff will jump out on the court and emulate other team sets for us so that we can get good reps on it. And I think on days of games, we're not trying to pound and do anything like 100%. You know what I mean? We're just trying to reiterate the things that we already went over the day before, whether that was on the floor or in the film room. You know what I'm saying? And so for us, like, we'll use a scout team. And if we don't, or if we think that they're a little bit lax for that particular shoot around, we'll use both players. We'll use players for the scout team, and then we'll flip flop. You know what I mean? But everybody pretty much is going to get a rep because you never know who you're going to need when you need them. And so we want everybody to be prepared and be ready for their opportunity when their number gets called.
Of course, now you're a head coach in the WNBA, so there comes with some stress and some pressures and some different things like that, of course. You seem pretty chill, but I'm curious, how do you manage that? What are some things that you do to cope with those different types of realities?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm great at that, to be honest. Like, you do get stressed out. That's just the nature of the job, and that's everywhere. It's not just me, but I think I try to decompress by doing other things because we're so in it during the season, you know what I mean? In terms of, all right, I got to watch film. I'm going to be up to da 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 da. There's no sleep. There's no, like, when you're in this, listen, God love our assistants, you know what I mean? As head coach, our assistants, because they're really in the thick of things, you know what I mean? And they're the ones doing like a ton of work for each scout getting the players prepared. But I think like when I feel myself in those moments, I just try to unplug and do something different. Let it go, come back to it. You know what I mean? Go watch a TV show that I'm interested in, or just do something different so that it is not an obsession. You know what I mean? It's not an obsession. I love it, but it's not my life. It's not everything. I love what I do and I enjoy what I do. And I enjoy the grind and the process of different things. But if it's getting to the point where it's just like too much, leave it alone. Come back to it. You may see something different when you come back. You may feel something different. You may be able to look at a situation, a POV differently by leaving it alone for a second. So I think that's one way that I try to hone in on that.
Yeah, great perspective on that. And one of those things that kind of comes often with being a professional coach is media or fans or everyone describing all the things that you could make adjustments.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about the process that you'd actually go through to make an adjustment, because clearly we don't make adjustments as coaches as much as fans or coach or media ever wants us to do, and nor should we.
Yeah. That's just part of the growth process of being a coach. As a young coach, that's inevitable in my career. You know what I mean? From year one to year three, like you always go back and you look at all the mistakes that you made. Like in the playoffs last year, we're up 20, something like that, and Dallas is going on this run. 2020 in hindsight, maybe I do call a timeout. My thought process in that time was like, all right, we're getting good looks. But maybe you call a timeout, settle down, and talk to them more about defending better. You know what I mean? Even though on the offensive end, you're still getting the looks that you would want to get. And so that's just inevitable. I think when you're in this profession, you got to have a thick skin and you got to be able to tune people out. But tune in the ones that need to be tuned in so that you can listen to the feedback and you can make those adjustments. So I had a coach tell me before, chew on the meat, spit out the bone. Take what it is that you need to take from the situation and spit out the rest of it. The unhealthy part that you can't swallow and can't chew anyway. And that's just part of it. There's going to be adjustments made. I think I get more upset as if I'm not quick enough within the game to make the adjustments. But after you go back and you watch and you see where you could have been better, like you make adjustments. That's just part of it. You know what I mean? So I don't get upset when you hear it. Fans are always going to question, why you not playing this person? Why this person don't play? You also don't have the bird's eye view that we do as coaches. To know that you have a snippet of whatever it is that you're looking at and what you think, and you're a fan, so it's a feeling. You're not looking at it, you know what I mean, from an objective standpoint. It's always subjective, you know what I mean?
You reference your growth as a coach, and you just highlighted so many things with that. But curious, this offseason, again, off-season being a misnomer, there's really no off-season. But for you, have there been any special projects that you dove into in terms of your development or for your team's benefit that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think one of the things, like, again, I mentioned earlier that we play a very open style, read and react type offense. And I think we want to continue to add to that every year, add different layers to that read and react. So this off-season, I really focused on researching different teams that play read and react or a style or a version of read and react. Because my version is different than Villanova's version, different than whoever's version of read and react. So this offseason, I really honed in on looking at different people's versions of read and react and trying to take a different layer from those different versions.
I love that. And you mentioned playing conceptually, or one of the challenges with that is obviously to be able to give them structure, but then be able to balance that structure with giving them freedom and balancing too much freedom with not enough freedom. And those are some tricky things, aren't they?
It's very tricky. That's one of my growths, right? It's one of my growths coming into this year, because I don't think that we did a great job of our shot selection at times. We could have been much, much better, but that's on me because of the freedom that I've given our players and that I want the players to be able to play with. And so now everybody thinks that any shot is a shot as long as it was an open shot. And that's not necessarily always the case. So I have to do a better job of letting them know that they do have freedom to make decisions and different things like that. But also, let's put some parameters in place, some structure in place so that they can still be the best version of themselves within that freedom.
And within that, obviously, comes up shot selection. So talk to us about how you help players understand what's a good shot for them and for your team.
Yeah, I think we do it by setting roles and setting understanding, like, this shot for this player makes sense because this player shoots at this percentage. So this shot for this player makes sense, whereas this shot for you doesn't make as much sense. I'm not sitting there saying that it's not a shot that you can't make. You probably can make it. But if you're taking these shots, that's two less shots that this person is taking who's better, maybe better at that type of shot. So it's just conversations. And again, I think it's always giving players the confidence that you have confidence in them, but I think highlighting areas where they shine at so that they understand, like, all right, I shine at this, let me focus on this. I think that's the key to it. Listen, I have confidence in you. If I didn't, you wouldn't be on this team. You wouldn't be playing, right? But this is where I know you're the best. You're the best here. So let's put you in the best situation possible. I never want you to look crazy out there. I'm going to put you in the best situation as possible. Trust me that I'm going to do that. And then let's see how it works. If it doesn't work, okay, we'll come back to the drawing board and we'll try something different. So I think it's just open dialogue. Open conversations with players about where we see them shining, where we see them shining the most.
Obviously, all positives right now. I've got two daughters, growth of basketball, lots of positives going on, but still obviously a lot of work to do. So can you share your thoughts on the evolving landscape of women's basketball and maybe the opportunities that you foresee in the future?
Women's basketball is amazing right now. If you're not a believer right now in this given space and time, then you'll just never be a believer. The play, the amazing athletes, like not just the W, you look at the collegiate players and the things that they're doing. You look at Caitlin Clark and what she's doing. Like, she is galvanizing. She's galvanizing like cities and states. And no matter where she goes, like, she's bringing crowds. And you look at South Carolina and what Dawn is doing. You know what I mean? Everywhere South Carolina goes, you got celebrities texting Dawn and tweeting Dawn and showing up at the South Carolina women's basketball games. So our game is in great hands. I think Dawn does a great job of promoting women's basketball and putting us and continuing to put it on the map. Obviously, the W, we do a great job of, the players do a great job of being amazing role models for young athletes, people to look up to and aspire to. And so our league is just amazing right now. I think women's basketball is just amazing right now. The growth that's happening and the notoriety that's being attained right now is something special. And I think it's just going to continue to do that. I think it's very evident that in 2026, Golden State will have a women's team, and I'm sure more teams will come to add. So I think the future is bright. The W is growing because of the popularity of women's basketball. And so we have some great things to look forward to here in the future in women's basketball.
Yeah, it's going to be fun moving forward. And do you foresee anything that you would like to change maybe about the W that you could share with us that could, it's on your wish list of things that could change that could help grow it or to help make it better?
Yeah, I think it's getting there. I think obviously expansion is something. I think it's inevitable, but I think we have to be very cautious with how we do it. You know what I mean? It would be great to maybe see the roster sizes increase so more young ladies have an opportunity. I also think that it would be a great thing to, and I don't know if we're in position to do this just yet, but it would be a great thing to also at some point have a developmental league. You know what I mean? Because there are so many young ladies coming out of college who want to pursue playing professionally. And obviously they know the W is the best of the best, the cream of the crop. So they want to take a crack out of that opportunity. And so maybe developing, having a league that we can develop some of these players who aren't making some of the rosters because they're short, because we just don't have a ton of teams yet. So I think that's something that I would love to see in the near future. I think our counterparts, our NBA counterparts, I think they do an amazing job of supporting the W. So them continuing to support the W, it'd be great to see more of them as owners as well, just to show, again, just to continue to show that support that they have, because our NBA counterparts, like, they game recognize game, you know what I mean? And they really do a great job of, I think, showing to the public that they respect the games of the players in the W. So I think all that is all encompassing. And those are things that I would love to see happen. And I think they will happen.
I love that perspective on the development league in particular, because there just are so few spots for so many great players now. And that makes it good because your roster is filled with really good players, right?
Yeah.
That's also a challenge for you as a coach, isn't it?
Yeah. Trying to play all these good players. I always looked at it, and I have a unique perspective because I've been in a lot of different positions as a player, right? I've been the player who didn't play as a rookie. You know what I mean? I've been the player who, the starter got hurt and now I'm thrown into the fire. I've been the player who worked their way up and now they are a starter. You know what I mean? And so I've been in a lot of different positions. I just try to focus and tell these players, like, your turn will come. Right. Continue to be prepared. Continue to do the work so that you're prepared when your turn comes, when your number is called, that you're ready to step into that opportunity. I think a lot of times, especially with the younger players, sometimes it's like they want it, but they might not necessarily be ready and prepared when it does come or when their shot does happen, because coaches go off consistency, right? And what they can trust. Let's be honest. So it's, if I give you this opportunity because, or if an opportunity presents itself and you're not ready for it, then the next time an opportunity presents itself, then my position might be different. So it's just, you got to continue to work and do the work so that when it presents itself, you're ready to step into it.
I love that phrasing, coach. Coaches go off consistency and what they can trust. That's really good phrasing. And maybe you mentioned not fully when you were playing, thinking about coaching as a possible career.
Yeah.
I'm curious now, do you have any advice for aspiring women who would like to go into coaching?
Yeah, I think in general, and this is not just in coaching, I think this is just in life, find a mentor. Like, the one thing that I was super, super blessed with was I went to college first and I coached under Kara Consueger. And when I say find a mentor, find somebody who wants to teach you how to do whatever it is that you're trying to do. Because it's one thing to go into coaching and you're helping somebody, et cetera, et cetera. But Kara was amazing with wanting to teach me, wanting me to have the opportunities. And so I was blessed with the opportunity to do a lot when I was at UNC Charlotte. She trusted me with a lot. And so that helped me grow. It helped my confidence. It just helped me continue to grow as a coach. And then from there, I coached under Bill Laimbeer, who, when I got there, the same thing, I had the opportunity to do a lot, to run practices. And so when I got this opportunity, you're never ready for it, but I feel like I was prepared for it because of those different coaches allowing me to do a lot and teaching me how to be a good coach. So I think finding a mentor, I think that's important. And I think doing the work, not being afraid to do work. Like, this is sometimes a thankless job where it's, you're doing it, you're not getting seen, and that's okay. Keep putting your head down, keep doing the work, because you will get seen at some point. And again, the same thing. And when that opportunity comes, you want to be prepared for it. And the only way that you can be prepared for it is by continuing to do the work.
Great. And obviously the value of the mentor to you. And are you now in a place where you are mentoring some young people in terms of their aspirations?
Yeah, I sure hope so. I really do. I think we have two positions. I think we have a former retired player transition program with our organization. And so they're privy to our coaching meetings. They're with us a lot during the season. The only time they're not with the coaching staff is when we're on the road. That's when they get to be on the business side of things. But other than that, they're in our practices, they're doing our videos. And so that's something that I take serious, being available to that position. And then we also have had on our staff a young former player who wants to coach as well. And so I think just being available and open to teaching and giving them opportunities to grow, to make mistakes, to learn is something that I hope that I'm passing along.
Absolutely. And what are you most excited about heading into this season, coach?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm most excited. I love, obviously, our pickups. I love our free agents that we were able to sign with Tina Charles, Jordan Canada, Ariel Powers, Nia Coffey coming back. Like, those are all great pickups for us. I'm really excited just to see how we compete every single day in practice. That's what's exciting me the most. I think we have a competitive team. I think we're going to have a tough team. It won't be without its bumps and bruises because that's just part of sports. But what I'm most excited about is to see this group of new and old players come together and compete their behinds off.
And you mentioned that competitive part of it. What are some things that you're doing within practice maybe to be able to create those competitive opportunities for your players that you get excited about and obviously they do as well?
Oh, drills. Like, majority of our drills in practice are competitive. Like, we're competing, whether it's three teams, whether it's the red team, the black team, and the guys, like, we're competing. So guys are in those competitions as well. So we're always figuring out ways where they can be competing against each other and they can be looking at each other. And it's a very healthy competition is where they want to win. You know what I mean? And so we do a lot of drills within practice, especially in training camp, that focus on always competing. So they always have those competitive juices flowing no matter what.
Coach, when I said offseason, obviously we already said it's not really an offseason. And certainly you've been immersed in USA basketball stuff as well. And that's got to be just an incredible experience. But talk to us a little bit about that experience and maybe some of your takeaways from that.
Yeah, first of all, what an honor to be asked to join them in any capacity, but as a scout coach. So I was able to help out in training camp in November and the fall, which was great because you're surrounded by such amazing athletes, the top of the top. These are the best in the world. So you're learning, like, I'm there to learn just as much as I'm there to add to the coaching staff. I'm learning from the players. I'm learning from coaches, Coach Mike, Coach Reeves, Coach Miller. And so it's just a great learning opportunity and a great experience to be there and be immersed in that and to represent your country. So that was great. Just came from Belgium with the qualifying tournament. So again, that competition was great, you know what I mean? Being on the international scene and being back overseas. So it brought back some memories of playing career and overseas. But all in all, just to be involved with USAB is such an amazing honor. And it's something that I think coaches, players, they dream of having that opportunity. So I'm honored.
Can you take us a little deeper into your actual role? What were you actually doing? Because I think, again, you already talked about this within your organization. Yeah. How all these small jobs or might be appear small jobs are actually big jobs.
Yep. Great point. So my actual role was scout coach. And so the teams that in the fall, I was only there for a short period of time. So that was when we played Tennessee. And so there wasn't really many scouting duties for that. But when we went to Belgium, I did have an opportunity. So the team that I scouted was the Senegal team. And so just making sure that the players are prepared. There's no surprises. They know exactly what's coming at them. And so let's talking with Coach Reeves about how she wants to play certain actions and different things and giving feedback. And so it was cool. It was a great experience. It brought me back to obviously my assistant days where cutting up film and you know what I mean? Where you're looking through film constantly, you're scouting live games, different things like that. So it was just a great opportunity to be involved and to be around the top women players in the world.
Coach Wright, honor, wonderful to talk to you. Great to see your success and your progress as from a player to a coach now. And can't wait to watch your team play this year. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Chris. We're excited about this season. We think we have a really good team. So we hope that as you're watching, if you're ever in the Atlanta area, please come out, bring your daughters. We'll show you a good time.
Appreciate that.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show and to give the Basketball Podcast and this week's guest a shout out on social media to show your support for us sharing the game. And to stay up to date on all things Basketball Immersion, subscribe to our newsletter at basketballimmersion.com/newsletter.